Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI sets off for Australia to celebrate World Youth Day. The Australian ambassador to the Holy See looks ahead to the World Youth Day lead-up and tells us about the kind of Australia the Pope is visiting in this particular time in history. Benedict XVI landed safely on Sunday at Australia's Richmond Air Force Base near Sydney. Right now he's resting after the nearly 20-hour flight from Rome in preparation for World Youth Day to be held in Sydney this week. Charles Collins tells us more about this first day of the Pope's in Sydney, Australia.
Pope Benedict spent his Monday in Australia at the Kenthurst Study Centre. The conference centre offers educational, cultural, and spiritual activities in its normal life. Set in 25 acres of native bushland on the outskirts of Sydney, the study centre is 8 kilometres from the town centre of Kenthurst in the northwest of Sydney and about 60 minutes by car from Sydney's central business district. During a press briefing, the Archbishop of Sydney, Cardinal George Pell, spoke to reporters about the Pope.
He's now resting at a retreat centre in northwest Sydney and is doing very well. The lodgings in Kenthurst are simple but comfortable. He does have access to a tennis court, but we don't anticipate that he will be using that. He is a few days to recover from the longest flight that he has undertaken, and I'm sure that he will be in fine form for his official welcome on Thursday.
On Monday morning, Pope Benedict celebrated Mass with his secretaries, personnel from the centre, and the priests of the personal prelature of Opus Dei, which is in charge of Kenthurst. On a Monday afternoon, Cardinal Pell and the coordinator for World Youth Day, Bishop Anthony Fisher, arrived at the centre for lunch, and afterward the two Australian bishops updated the Holy Father on the preparations for World Youth Day. During the evening, Pope Benedict attended a concert at the center performed by the Sydney Symphony Fellows. On the program was Schubert, Mozart, and Schumann. The Holy Father's first public appearance will be the ceremony of welcome on Thursday morning at the Government House of Sydney. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks to Charles Collins for that report. Upon Pope Benedict's arrival on Sunday, he was greeted by political and religious representatives, including the Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd and Cardinal George Pell, the Archbishop of Sydney. This international trip is the ninth of Benedict XVI's pontificate and the second such international youth event he has presided at. The first was in Cologne, Germany, in 2005. As Charles mentioned earlier, Pope Benedict is scheduled to rest for a few days before embarking on an intense lineup of meetings with young people. The first papal public event will be a welcome ceremony at Sydney's Government House on Thursday, after which the Holy Father will visit the Blessed Mary MacKillop Memorial Chapel. In the afternoon, the Pope will board the ship Sydney 2000 and travel by sea to Barangaroo East Darling Harbour, where he's scheduled to deliver his first address to the youth pilgrims. On Friday, he will meet with government leaders and later participate in an ecumenical meeting in the crypt of St. Mary's Cathedral. He will also meet with a group of representatives of other religions. On Saturday, he will celebrate Mass with Australian bishops, seminarians, and men and women religious novices, and consecrate the new altar. And in the afternoon, the Holy Father will preside at the World Youth Day Vigil. The week-long event will culminate with an open-air Mass on July the 20th at Randwick Racecourse, where some 500,000 people are expected to attend. But right now, Chris Altieri has a report with details on the Pope's schedule and on expectations and the leitmotif of this journey.
Pope Benedict's public appearances are scheduled to begin on Thursday of this week after a few days' rest at the Kenthurst Study Center outside Sydney.
Religion, Christian faith, is in a certain sense in crisis. This is clear because the impression was we do not need God. We can all do ourselves.
During the customary in-flight press conference shortly after takeoff, Pope Benedict said he is optimistic for the future of the Church in Australia, as in the West generally and in all the world, noting that the Church in the Western world, and Europe especially, is in crisis, though not in decline.
Now, in this historical moment, we begin to see that we need God.
In his message to the people of Australia and to the young pilgrims taking part in this 23rd World Youth Day, the hunger and thirst that all human beings, and especially young people, have for God was one of the Holy Father's principal motifs. How much our world needs a renewed outpouring of the Holy Spirit, says Pope Benedict in the message, and he goes on to say, there are still many who have not heard the good news of Jesus Christ, while many others, for whatever reason, have not recognized in this good news the saving truth that alone can satisfy the deepest longings of their hearts. Quoting from Psalm 104, the Pope prays, when you send forth your Spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth. The Holy Father then expresses his firm belief that young people are called to be instruments of that renewal, communicating to their peers the joy they have experienced through knowing and following Christ, and sharing with others the love that the Spirit pours into their hearts, so that they too will be filled with hope and with thanksgiving for all the good things they have received from our Heavenly Father.
In the past, I believed that young people really were not very open to the experience of community, whether it was in the church or within the civic community, or even within the family.
The desire for community is something that the former Archbishop of the host city of World Youth Day, 1993, Denver, Colorado, and current major penitentiary of Holy Roman Church, Cardinal James Francis Stafford, discussed with me recently in an interview at his offices in the Apostolic Chancery.
It was one of the most rewarding experiences that I've had, not simply as a bishop, but as a priest and as a Christian. And it was rewarding because I could see in the face of young people a new awareness of what they have been called to live, that is, their vocation as Christians. In other words, I found young people finding Christ in one another. World Youth Day changed my view of young people, that they were very open to the church, as a matter of fact, hungry for the community of forgiveness and of mercy. That is the church.
Every nation, every tribe, come together to worship you.
Paraphrasing St. Augustine, whose autobiographical Confessions remain to this day among the most riveting and compelling accounts of conversion ever composed, at the beginning of his visit to the great southern land of the Holy Spirit, as he calls it in his message, Pope Benedict says his prayer is that the hearts of the young people who gather in Sydney for the celebration of World Youth Day will truly find rest in the Lord, and that they will be filled with joy and fervor for spreading the good news among their friends, their families, and all whom they meet.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. Meanwhile, just last week, the Australian ambassador to the Holy See actually popped into Vatican Radio and gave us of her time to talk about the lead-up to World Youth Day, how preparations have been going, and above all, about the kind of Australia the Pope is visiting in this particular time in history. Her name is Anne Plunkett, and she told my colleague Chris Altieri that she was so excited because she was to be at the airport in person to see Pope Benedict off as he flew off to her homeland.
I'd like to think that the journey of His Holiness to Australia, his first visit to Australia, begins, in fact, with my farewell to him at the airport, in which I sent the messages of welcome from the Australian government and people, and send him on his way on what I know will be a wonderful journey.
John Paul II was in Australia in 95. And so this is, we're 13 years on, and it's a new pope who is coming to a country that has, and a people that has preserved its character, but has also developed. What kind of Australia is the Holy Father going to be finding?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that, of course, he is going to Australia for World Youth Day, and what I would say in terms of the World Youth Day context and Australia as it is now is that His Holiness and the young pilgrims who are coming to Australia will find a society in which they can feel very comfortable. We've got, I think, over 200 nationalities or country of origin in Australia now. There will be, therefore, some element of the community to which almost every pilgrim could relate. And it is a country in which, I think it's one in four, as I said, Australians were born overseas, about 240 languages spoken, and a very proud indigenous culture, which is one of the, I think, the oldest continuous living ancient culture in the world. So it is an old, a modern, a dynamic, a prosperous, a welcoming, an inclusive, tolerant society.
That has gone to great lengths to make people welcome. I mean, on the concrete level, the planning of this, the logistics involved are enormous, mind-boggling.
They are indeed.
Can you walk us through a little bit of that? Can you help us get our heads around it?
Yes, I can. I think one of the first things to remember is that Australia has a proud reputation for excellence in helping to organise these very large events. The Olympic Games in Sydney in 2000 and the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne in 2000. So we're building on that to ensure that an event as significant as this one, I think we're going to have more international participants than those previous two events attracted. And the Australian government, the federal government, recognised that this entailed some quite significant logistical planning challenges. And for that reason, there has been a great deal of assistance given by the federal government and by the state government working to support those organisational and planning and security and transport, all of those elements of the visit to help the church organisers to make sure that this works very well. And of course, we're a country that welcomes visitors. I think there were about 5.6 million tourists who came to Australia in the last set of statistics that I saw, and we're proud of our country. We want to be able to show it off to all of the young people, this special group of young people who are coming, and to the something like 3,000 international and domestic media who will be covering the visit of His Holiness and World Youth Day. So it's a wonderful opportunity for us to show the world again who we are.
Every nation, every tribe, come together to worship you.
Your visitors this time are there in a slightly different capacity from that of the average normal tourist, let's say. In fact, some of them, many people have already arrived and are making their way in pilgrimage across.
They are, through the days in the diocese.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about the pilgrim trail?
Well, what I could say is this, that what we were very keen to do was to provide the pilgrims with an opportunity to see more of Australia. And what we did was, through our immigration authorities, was to facilitate a fee-free visa that would allow a stay of around about 3 months. There are other visa categories, but to encourage people to stay for a slightly longer period of time. And the days in the diocese allow people to get out into regional Australia and into other cities in Australia, and again, to get to know us at the parish level. And for them, their personal and cultural and spiritual journey can be then combined with getting to know the Australian people, getting to know us, and getting to know a little bit more about the country before they come into Sydney. And of course, in a practical sense, it helps with the logistical arrangements so that people stagger their arrivals and stagger their departures. And of course, we'd like to see them come back.
Can you give us an idea, because just these immense expanses of land, the physical size and the variety of the kinds of physical and natural beauty that people are going to be encountering. You've been talking about putting your best foot forward here, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to fire our imagination a little bit by talking about the richness, the physical beauty of Australia.
Well, I suppose the first thing that I should say is where World Youth Day, of course, has its focus and is taking place is in Sydney, which has one of the most beautiful harbours in the world. And it's not just the parochial perspective there. It's recognised internationally as one of the most beautiful harbour settings for a city. As the pilgrims travel around, they'll see that our country varies from that coastal, bit more lush area, and which stretches, and it's our most highly settled part of the country, all along that coastline on the eastern seaboard, a beautiful sort of coastline, which in itself varies from the cooler climates down south up to subtropical in Queensland. Then if you're moving west across the country, and by the way, it takes it takes longer to fly from Perth across to Sydney than it does to go from Perth up to Bali. I know, because I've done it. And that really sort of gives you an idea of just the immensity of the country and of that large area of the interior, which is, if I say desert, it doesn't give you the proper appreciation of the variety and beauty of the landscape of our interior and up in our north. So depending on where they go, they could be in gum trees, they could be looking at baobab trees up in the Northern Territory, they could be going along the Great Barrier Reef. It'd be nice if some of them got out to do that, one of the wonders of the world. They could be even in what is our winter, in what seems like a warm summer climate up in the north, down to the much cooler areas in the snowfields south of Canberra, our national capital, and Melbourne, which has a climate similar to Dublin, where I'm located. So there's a huge range of landscapes. In terms of culture as well, it is interesting for the pilgrims to be able to see the differences between our urban environment and our regional environment, and in some of those more remote areas, to gain a greater appreciation of our very strong and vibrant and proud Indigenous culture. And this is particularly so if you can get out into western New South Wales, or up into the Northern Territory around Kakadu, or out into the Kimberley, which has the most stunning rock formations and evidence of Indigenous culture and traditions going back some 40,000 years or more. Now, you know, you set that in a context of people coming from over 200 different countries and in a very ancient land, a very modern urban environment, then I think you've got a wonderful mix there for the visitor.
You've mentioned now the antiquity and the vibrance of the Indigenous people, who are going to be also playing a very important role as an honor guard, if you will, for the Holy Father.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk with us a little bit about how this came about?
Well, I mentioned before that Australia is a tolerant and inclusive society. One of the things that is important is our reconciliation, our journey of reconciliation with the Indigenous peoples of Australia. We have a new government, which was elected in November last year, and one of the first things that Prime Minister Kevin Rudd did was to issue the national apology to what is known as the Stolen Generations. He there took a bipartisan approach and was joined with the leader of the opposition. This was a very significant moment in the relationship between the Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples of Australia. That sorry was a very important symbolic moment, but it was also a moment of practical commitment. There is an awareness and an acknowledgement not only of the pain and suffering and grief and shame of the past and past actions, but also a commitment to taking practical action to address what is still areas of significant disadvantage. So I think it has to be seen in that context of Australians moving forward in partnership down a long and difficult road to address some of these very, you know, extremely difficult issues. But also World Youth Day, the visit of His Holiness, allows us to acknowledge publicly, too, again, the pride we take in the Indigenous peoples and culture of our country and their own pride in a viable, long-standing, proud culture. So I think that that will be a very moving part of the visit and an important symbolic part as well.
As Australia continues to work to address and to struggle with the enduring consequences of past treatment of the Indigenous peoples, the apology that was issued at the beginning of the present administration was something that had repercussions outside of Australia. It was an example was set, I think.
Exactly. I think it has been seen as a genuine model for reconciliation and for acknowledgement of the impact of occupation, of settlement on existing Indigenous cultures. My own experience has been that it has been a statement that has been read and listened to with respect and admiration and with hope for the way forward.
And I don't want to get us too much sidetracked here, but it's mm-hmm. an extremely interesting question.
It is, and
an important one. So I'd like to stay on it a little bit and go back to, because you talked about the concrete commitment to keep working. Can you talk with us a little bit about the nuts and the bolts of addressing the issue?
In his speech, in his national apology, the Prime Minister made specific commitments in terms of things like preschool education. And there were also specific commitments in terms of health, education more generally, and employment and improvement in life expectancy, because there is quite a significant disparity between Indigenous and non-Indigenous life expectancy. So they have set for us as a country specific targets and timelines in which to try to meet those targets.
Now, Western culture is not all bad. You know, this
no,
is
isn't.
The other thing.
Nor were the people who interacted all bad either. Nor were all the experiences negative.
How is Australia managing that tension, though, between preserving cultural identity and integrity and at the same time bringing the benefits of the best of what we have to offer?
Very big question. And I think that the first thing that we have to say is that I would say that the Indigenous community in Australia is well able to speak for itself on some of these issues, and I would not be presumptuous enough to speak on their behalf. That's the very first thing that I would say. I think the key thing that comes out of the Prime Minister's speech is the process of consultation. So rather than me state what I think some of the resolutions will be or how we'll go forward, I think it's important to say that this will be a dialogue and that one of the important things will be to listen and to hear what the Indigenous communities themselves want, remembering that those communities are as diverse as any other communities. So there are Indigenous people living in very remote communities, which brings with it particular challenges and benefits to those communities and choices. And there are those in regional Australia, and there are those in the urban environment. So it's very important, I think, that we understand the Prime Minister's commitment to a genuine process of dialogue and consultation.
Now, you've discussed the openness of Australian society, the tolerance is a word that you used. It is a country where religious values, if you will, have an acknowledged place in the public sphere. But again, like all modern, dynamic, evolving societies, is dealing with managing a certain kind of tension between...
I would call it a healthy tension myself. I think that we are a society that promises and delivers religious freedom. We also have a society that has a robust parliamentary democracy and a sound, strong secular basis to its society as well. We have about over 60%, I think, who nominate themselves as being Christian, and within that, about 25% who say that they are Catholic. And there are a number of other Christian denominations, and increasing, though small, numbers of Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists. So it's, it's a diverse religious and spiritual community as well.
When the Pope comes to town, it's an event in and of itself. It's an exciting moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the final preparations? How are people getting excited about the run-up to the Holy Father's arrival?
I think, first of all, it's obvious to anyone who reads the Australian papers that there is a growing focus on the visit by His Holiness. Within the Days in the Diocese program, of course, there's been a building up of excitement in the sense of that community. And also, of course, the travelling around Australia of the cross and the icon has received a lot of publicity within local communities and nationally. And the arrival of the cross and the icon had got a lot of publicity and, of course, had the then Prime Minister greeting it and making a speech. So I think that there has been a sense of a growing momentum and ready to welcome His Holiness. And, of course, they don't have long to wait now.
Let's wrap it up then. Let's, if I could ask, could you share with our listeners your auspices for the Holy Father and for the event itself of World Youth Day?
What I think should be obvious from all of my comments so far is that I know that Australia and Sydney in particular will be ready to welcome His Holiness, and that the government itself, of course, has made it clear that the visit is an important one for them. Everything is ready, and I will be looking forward to ensuring that at the farewell I become part of that warm welcome.
You've been listening to Anne Plunkett, the Australian Ambassador to the Holy See. Of course, we'll be following Pope Benedict XVI's journey to Australia and the World Youth Day events in all of our broadcasts. So do keep tuned to Vatican Radio's English feature programme and English News for daily news reports and for in-depth interviews of what's going on every day. That's all from the English feature programme and from me, Linda Bordoni, today. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.